Hello, it's Wednesday 24th of March. I'm Hannah Pearson from Peer Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bauerman of Check In Asia.
On this week's show, we'll be talking all things travel bubbles, yet again. Yes, bubbles are back in the news, but what's different this time, if anything? So, let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So, as Hannah said, today we're revisiting the subject of travel bubbles yet again. They're back in the news once more. And in fact, it's hard to find any media outlets across Southeast Asia in which a tourism minister, an official, a travel industry spokesman, or absolutely anybody isn't talking up the possibility of new bubbles. In many ways, it feels like a return to September or October last year, and perhaps even more so. So Hannah, let's kick off. I'm going to ask you the first question, which is the why now question. Why are travel bubbles making headlines again in March 2021? And is there any substance to this speculation?
Well, it's a good question. Why now? I mean, like you said, we've been talking about this for what feels like forever. But I don't know. I feel like this time, there is a different feeling behind it. I think there's almost a more kind of the idea that it will become a definite thing, whereas before I think it was always more impossibility. Now they're looking more like realities. I think a lot of that is to do with economically. There's this urgency now. Of course, countries have been closed for over a year in the region, so they really have woken up to the fact that they have to figure out how to reopen. And they're just planning, aren't they? You know, they're starting to do vaccination now, and now they've got to really seriously think about how can they go about reopening the country. And travel bubbles have always looked like a great way to go about this. I mean, whether that is true, it will remain to be seen, right? Because we haven't seen an actual travel bubble come off yet.
No, not a two-way one. That's absolutely true. So I mentioned in the intro there that it seems a bit like September, October last year. Now, that was the time when the Hong Kong, Singapore air travel bubble was, you know, really in the news. A lot of countries in the region were kind of spiraling off that and trying to set up or talk about their own travel bubbles. But I mean, the whole thing actually goes back, as we've said on the pod before, goes back to early last year. And I actually checked back. It was the 23rd of April, 2020, when the New Zealand media first discussed Australia and New Zealand talking about setting up a travel bubble. And at that point, it was still going to be down the line. But that was the 23rd of April, which, if you think about it, was 11 months ago yesterday.
Yeah, I think that says a lot about the, you know, on paper, it's something that looks very simple. You take two countries that have similar kind of COVID strategies or at a similar level of COVID cases and open them up to one another. But it's really not as simple as that, is it?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, I think Australia and New Zealand, we'll come to that in a minute, really exemplify just how tricky this has been. But, you know, 11 months of talking about travel bubbles. And actually, I was reading a tweet last week, I think, by Rafa Ali, who's the CEO and the founder of Skift. And he said, globally, when you think about it, it's only countries in Asia that are actually talking about travel bubbles and probably only have been going way back. I mean, there were one or two discussed in Europe last summer. But, you know, the focus is definitely on this region. And I guess that's because, you know, the border closures have been the most stringent in this part of the world. I mean, we live in Malaysia. Our borders were closed on the 18th of March last year. That's over a year ago now. Most other countries in the region are exactly the same. As you mentioned there, Han, you know, there is this economic urgency now. There is also this need, you know, if we go back to last year, even September, October last year, vaccines still seem to be in the future. We were hoping that they would come, but travel border planning at that point was still reliant on the fact that vaccines weren't in the equation, but they are now. And as you said, governments have to plan for the economic side of the future, but also the social and healthcare side of the future, because although vaccine rollouts are still relatively slow, they are happening. And by the end of this year, you know, the world will hopefully look a little bit different. And governments and countries and societies have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, they do. Absolutely. They need, even if they're only planning to start opening at the end of the year, they need a roadmap, and they need to be able to communicate that roadmap to the industry as well, so that people can prepare and make sensible business decisions. So what's the same, Gary? We've just talked about maybe what's a little bit different on the economic urgency and so on. Are we still facing the same issues?
Well, the main issues are trying to find reciprocation between countries. I mean, that's the biggest problem, isn't it? As you said, you know, if we go back to last year, Australia, New Zealand, two isolated island countries, there's a lot of travel flows ordinarily between those two countries. They have relatively similar cultures. And it seemed at that point as though they were in a similar place in terms of managing COVID-19. Obviously, Australia went through bigger problems through the summer and autumn of last year. But the issues are still relatively the same. I was reading, I'll come onto them a little bit, but they're still unsure about how you would manage an outbreak if it did happen in one country, because you would have a number of citizens from another country in your country, probably can't get back. How will you manage the contact tracing? You know, how will you manage the monitoring and tracking of travelers in the country, which is something we're going to have to get used to when travel bubbles do reopen. Now, if we do travel to other countries, we're going to be tracked and traced the whole time wherever we go. And we don't really know what the restrictions will be on where we can go at that point. So none of these issues have really gone away. Vaccines haven't really cleared away that. I mean, I can lead you into Thailand. You've been studying Thailand quite closely. They have this three-stage plan moving forward. But even that doesn't really include a definitive statement on removing quarantines, does it?
No, it doesn't. And it seems that we've almost just got this double safety net, whereas before they were just looking at travel bubbles with testing. Now it's testing plus vaccination. So it somehow becomes even more complicated, because as we've said before, then it means each other's governments are going to have to recognize each other's vaccines as valid. You know, what happens if one country doesn't like Sinovac and hasn't approved it for use in their own country? Will they accept somebody coming in who has been vaccinated with that vaccination certificate recognition, all of that? It just becomes a lot more complicated, actually.
Yeah, and you asked me a couple of moments ago, you know, what's similar to when we were talking about these before, and I think what is actually similar is that countries in the region have different plans, they have different strategies, and they have different objectives. If we're looking at, we'll come onto these in a moment, you look at Thailand and perhaps parts of Indonesia, they're looking at a more broad-based reopening, whereas other countries in the region are still looking almost specifically this sort of travel corridor or the old-style travel bubble model or anything in between. And it's quite hard for countries to match these and pair these when you don't really know who's negotiating with who else. So it's a muddled situation. And you know, we've said this many times on the pod before, ASEAN really hasn't stepped up to the breach here, and countries are going their own way. And that makes it very difficult, I think, to get agreements.
Yeah. So let's have a look at what's been going on regionally, because outside of Southeast Asia, there has been more, I guess, tangible movement really on travel bubbles. And we keep talking about Australia and New Zealand, and there was just some news about that that came out yesterday, right, Gary?
Yeah. So let's rewind a little bit. So we're talking that 23rd of April last year, New Zealand and Australia originally started talking about this. It actually happened on the 16th of October last year, but it was only a one-way bubble from New Zealand. Travelers and residents were able to go to Australia. Australians are still precluded from visiting New Zealand. Now, there has been speculation, a lot of speculation in recent days and recent weeks, that this is about to become a two-way bubble, probably the world's first proper two-way bubble. And everybody was expecting that the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, would announce a date for the commencement this week. She has actually veered away from doing that. She said she won't announce a date until the 6th of April. So we have a couple more weeks yet to wait. But it does look like things are quite positive. She said that some of the issues they still have to work through, as I mentioned before, how they actually manage contact tracing, how they manage isolation facilities in case there is a breakout. And she said that one of the issues as well is that it won't be, as everybody had hoped, a straightforward Australia to New Zealand bubble. It will be on a state-by-state basis. It will be gradual. It will be phased. There aren't any details about that yet, but that's what she said will be announced. But interestingly, last night, Australia's federal government has actually amended the legislation relating to Australia's travel ban and its closure of borders. And it now excludes people, or it will do, it will exclude people flying to New Zealand from Australia. So that actually paves the way legally for a travel bubble. So when we actually talk about, well, why are travel bubbles so difficult to set up? Well, the Australia's case really exemplifies that. There are actually laws and legislation in place preventing Australians from traveling outbound to other countries. And that, you know, they're not the only country in the region that has that legal basis right now. So reopening is difficult, setting up bubbles is difficult, and Australia and New Zealand are really proving that, even though I would say, you know, among all the countries in our region, they have been the most proactive in trying to get this in place, but we still don't have one yet.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at New Zealand Cook Islands, which is one that, again, was meant to be up in place already because they announced it quite some time ago, it's the same. New Zealand is taking its time very much on that. They're waiting for the Cook Islands to build a test processing centre, which should be ready middle of April. And they're waiting for this new date. So it seems like New Zealand is just being very, very cautious. And, you know, the PM has said that opening borders without proper controls might lead to more lockdowns, and that in itself risks domestic travel. So I think she is trying to take a very cautious, measured way of reopening and not just flinging open the borders to everybody.
Yeah, and if you want something that's a little bit gloomier, but something I guess we're all going to have to be ready for if more travel bubble arrangements are made in our region. New Zealand has also announced today that, and this is going to start from June, so perhaps this is an indicator of when the two-way bubble will actually start, but it's announced that from June, New Zealanders must stay in New Zealand upon their arrival back to the country for a minimum of 180 days. That's 6 months. That's been extended from 90 days. So if you take a trip out of the country and then you return, you won't be able to leave again for 6 months. You know, that I think is something that other countries around the region might also might implement.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting restriction. I guess it's to protect people to a certain extent, or perhaps to minimize the expense of quarantine facilities or manage the availability of them to make sure that people, you know, New Zealanders aren't constantly crossing over the border to Australia.
I think it's both of those, and I think it's also a disincentive for people to travel. I don't think New Zealand wants its residents traveling frequently. I think it wants to really manage this very, very carefully, at least for the next 6 months, probably for a longer period than that. As you said, Hannah, absolutely right. They are being extremely cautious in every single aspect and detail. And this is, I would imagine, a blueprint that everybody around the region will be looking at very closely.
So moving on to another travel bubble in the region that's had quite a lot of press recently, and that's between Taiwan and Palau, which it seems like a bit of an interesting combination, I suppose. But Palau is one of the, I think, 15 countries which recognises Taiwan as a country. So in terms of politics, I think there's definitely motivation there. So this is a travel bubble that is meant to take off from the 1st of April. And the two countries have really managed COVID incredibly well. So Palau has had zero infections, which is super impressive. Taiwan has had less than 1,000. So when you look at it on the face of it, they're both two islands. They both managed COVID very well. It's a little bit easier then to manage what's going on. So at the beginning, they are going to be having two flights a week, a maximum of 110 people per flight. And it's still quite a restricted travel bubble, I'd say. So people have to take pre-arranged group tours, can only visit certain tourist sites, stay at approved hotels. But crucially, there's no quarantine, there are tests, but that's it. So it looks pretty exciting, and this could be a genuine two-way bubble that hopefully should come off before the Australia-New Zealand, but it's not going to generate significant amount of volume. 110 people per flight, two flights per week, is not going to add significant revenue.
No, I would agree. I think it's very much a test case. As you said there, you know, there are still quite stringent restrictions in terms of how you book, where you stay, when you go, and how the whole thing is managed. It also really shows, I think, as you mentioned also, Hannah, at the beginning, just how entrenched politics in tourism is now and will be in the future. And to actually kick off this travel bubble, the Palau president is visiting Taipei this weekend. As you mentioned, the actual bubble starts on the 1st of April, and he's going to be on the first flight back from Taipei to Palau with travelers. So, you know, there's this huge photo shoot opportunity. And, you know, it's really turning tourism into, a political TV moment, I guess. We'll have to get used to that because that's something that's going to happen more and more.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's something worth celebrating, isn't it? That the fact that these things are opening and people can travel for leisure, I think, is worth celebrating worldwide. Looking closer to home then, what is going on with travel bubbles in Southeast Asia? I mean, there are certainly a lot of plans afoot. Whether they will all actually come to fruition is completely another question. But I think the one that is currently at the top of everybody's minds, at least this week, is this proposed travel corridor between Indonesia and Singapore. Though it's not the whole of Indonesia. It is just Bintan and Batam. And even then, it's specific areas. So it's Nongsa in Batam and Lagoy in Bintan. And these would be open to Singaporean travellers. Indonesia has actually proposed that this would come off from the 21st of April. We've still not really heard Singapore's response, but the Singapore Foreign Minister is visiting Indonesia this week, so we presume more details are going to come out in the next few days about it. But the interesting thing about this is that although it is a travel corridor, I suppose it's not really a travel bubble, or at least not a two-way travel bubble, because it's initially only for Singaporeans to come into Indonesia. And that's what the tourism minister said. He said, focused on how tourists can come here, not for Indonesian tourists to go abroad. There's very much that inbound focus. Whether that will be an incentive enough for Singapore to open remains to be seen. You know, what would Singapore have to gain from this? Indonesia, of course, has plenty to gain to support the local tourism economies in those areas. But what has Singapore got to gain from letting Singaporean travellers out? Not sure.
Yeah, well, you know, what's the same, what's different to travel bubbles when we were talking about them before? You know, you've just hit it there. The focus very much in terms of the way that this is presented is inbound travel, you know, how countries are trying to reboot their inbound travel through these bubbles. And very little is talked about the outbound side of things. As you mentioned there, Singapore is going to have exclusivity to these islands. We don't know for how long. It hasn't yet been agreed. There's also some sort of scientific developments as well. To act for Singaporeans to visit Batam or Bintan, they would have to show a negative PCR test. And they would be screened upon arrival using a COVID-19 breath test system. So they wouldn't actually have to have, you know, the horrible nasal swab test. I think it's called G-Nose, which is a breath test system. So hopefully that's something that can get rolled out in future. But yeah, you're right. This is on a relatively small scale. Singapore hasn't yet confirmed that it will agree to it. Again, it will be on a test case basis. And the Indonesian tourism minister has kind of intimated that this is a very small scale test to see whether they can actually roll this out to Bali later in the year.
Yeah, I mean, Indonesia is not the only country right now who wants a travel bubble with Singapore. I think Singapore is very much in demand. So, of course, we've had Australia coming out very recently saying that they're in talks with Singapore about a travel bubble. I mean, and of course, here the impetus is actually on Australia's side, because for Singapore, Australians can enter into Singapore without having to serve their stay home notice, the quarantine period. And Singaporeans are also permitted to travel outbound to Australia from Singapore's point of view. Australia is the one that is not allowing Singaporeans in. So I think it's the onus very much on Australia to figure out what a travel bubble from their side means.
And New Zealand as well. New Zealand will have a huge say in this, because if they're going to open up a bubble with Australia, you know, having a third member in that grouping, you know, that really changes quite a lot. So New Zealand is talking about doing a state-by-state basis with Australia. You know, maybe Singapore would start with other states, so there is absolutely no overlap at all. I don't know. I mean, I think at the moment it's primarily Australia, New Zealand. Singapore is something they would like to do further down the line, but my suspicion from the way New Zealand have managed this is that Singapore won't be in the scenario immediately.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how that plays out, because obviously Singapore is a key transit hub for Australia as well. So in many ways, I think it does make sense to open up Singapore with Australia. But like you say, it's that complication, of course, when you get more and more travel bubbles, and how are they all compatible with one another?
The timing to do Australia, New Zealand in the next sort of couple of months is pretty good, because it's the New Zealand ski season. So Australians love going to New Zealand for the skiing and winter sports season. And that will be a good test case to actually see if this, you know, if they can make this work. And then perhaps you would think that both countries might look to perhaps expand to Singapore for the Australia, New Zealand summer season. But, you know, there'll be 100 million variables in between.
So another country that is quite keen to set up a travel bubble with Singapore is Taiwan. And Taiwan are actually in the same position as Australia. So again, Taiwanese travelers are allowed to have the air travel pass on arrival to Singapore, which means they don't have to serve any quarantine period. So again, the impetus is on Taiwan to figure out how a travel bubble would work. But it looks like they've got the taste for it now, right? Now they've set up one with Palau. Perhaps it's not too much for them to think about how you can extend that then to Singapore.
Yeah, Taiwan's had the benefit of really developing a rigorously and a really impressive track and trace system. So, you know, that's all in place, and Singapore likewise. So those two countries, I would say, are quite compatible. It just comes down to how they're going to manage the safety aspects and just the concerns that if an outbreak would happen. But again, they'll be very controlled, very strictly managed, low volumes in between. So even if they do happen, it's not really taking us too close to where we used to be. It's going to be a gradual phased reopening.
So Taiwan have also been in talks with Vietnam, although Vietnam have not confirmed from their side that they're in talks with Taiwan about a travel bubble. So that's probably the crucial fly in the ointment there, because we know that Vietnam has really been very, very much closed. You know, it has not really tried to strike up too many travel arrangements. I think it had one briefly with Japan before Japan closed its borders, had something with Laos. But other than that, it has really not pursued travel bubbles and actually not really talked about travel bubbles too much. But slowly, I think they are waking up to the realization that they are going to have to open up their borders eventually. But, you know, they don't have as much of a economic motivation to do so, do they? They've had a very strong domestic tourism market.
I would agree with that. The economic impetus is not as big as in some other countries, but you know, they do want these airlines to start growing again. You know, Bamboo has done pretty well. Vietjet has ambitions to be, you know, one of the region's strongest low-cost carriers. So they do want to get that going. I think it comes down to a little bit like we've said before, that once some countries in the region start to make moves, others will follow quite probably. But Vietnam, you're right, it's played its cards very closely to its chest. And at the moment, it's a lot of what it's talking about is developing and boosting domestic tourism pretty much for the rest of the year. There's a lot of opportunities and it's a big market for them to build further. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at their vaccination plan for Vietnam, they're not planning to start vaccinating the general population until Q4 this year, maybe until Q2 next year. So the odds are stacked against them, I think, in terms of reopening borders if they're looking at those kind of vaccination timelines.
Yeah, and I think it's another country that's also sort of holding back a little bit, trying to develop its own vaccine. And I think it wants to start administering that as soon as it can. It won't be till later in the year, as you said. So yeah, maybe we won't see too much movement there.
And the last kind of interesting travel bubble that was bubbling up was this suggestion of a bubble between Indonesia and Langkawi, which it was just mentioned briefly. There was not much about it. There has not been much about it since. But this to me seems like a bit of a strange idea. And it is very much centered around the idea of this was proposed by Malaysia, very much focused on inbound tourists coming to Indonesia. I can't imagine that there is a huge market for Malaysians traveling specifically from Langkawi to Indonesia right now.
It does seem a curious one. I mean, the more obvious one would have been Indonesia to Penang, because it's such a strong medical tourist destination for Indonesians. But yeah, you're right, Langkawi, it does seem a little bit strange. And it's also quite strange, and I think one of the reasons it's disappeared off the radar a little bit is, you know, in Malaysia, we can't travel domestically mostly at the moment. There are still very, very strict rules in place. So it would be quite weird to be talking about a bubble with Indonesia when, you know, your own citizens can't travel. But having said that, there is still a lot of talk about travel bubbles here. You know, the Tourism, Arts and Culture Minister continues to talk about these six countries that they've identified and they want to do travel bubbles with. They are Singapore, Korea, Japan, Vietnam, China, and Brunei. You know, anybody could pick those six countries. I think anybody in the region would want to do that. The minister also said this week that they've actually put together some standard operating procedures. And these, again, are very restrictive. So if they do actually open bubbles, travelers will only be able to book through registered tourism agents and travel in small groups. They also said that they're targeting specific activities for foreign tourists: golf and outdoor activities, snorkeling and diving. But then this week, the Singapore Foreign Affairs Minister was in was in Kuala Lumpur. He also visited Brunei and Indonesia. And there was talk there about a coordinated application process in terms of vaccination certificates using the same blockchain technology, which might open up some degree of travel. I think it would be very limited between Malaysia and Singapore. So there's just a lot of mixed messages. Obviously, governments are trying to talk to whoever they can. It's a very, very difficult situation. But actually cutting through what is likely to happen and what really is still spin is very, very difficult.
It is, yeah. I mean, for me, I can imagine that Indonesia, Singapore, that the Bintan Batam coming off. But my question is still, what's Singapore? What's in it for Singapore? Maybe the Singapore Taiwan again, because it's island to island, a bit like the Singapore Hong Kong. And you never know, maybe Singapore Hong Kong will eventually come off. But I'm not holding my breath for any others right now.
You just wonder if it's almost a little bit of just to release a pressure valve, just to allow Singaporeans just to take a break, even if it's for a weekend. I think you mentioned at the weekend that it was 100,000 Singaporeans have taken trips or cruises to nowhere.
Yeah.
In recent months. I mean, that's huge. Yeah. That's a huge amount of people. And if you can go to Batam or Bintan, which are very close to Singapore, for a weekend, I think, you know, the demand would be really high.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting because they're really very much aware that they need to conform with Singapore's hygiene certification, the SG Clean. So I think they are going to look to get their properties certified by SG Clean as just that additional reassurance for Singaporean travellers. So it's quite interesting that they're really adapting and thinking, how can we, you know, give reassurance and give confidence to Singaporean travellers?
So that's a bit of a sweep around what's happening in the region or what's being talked about, what might be happening in the region. So let's just sort of take a recap on some of the big issues that we've discussed here, because these have still got to be ironed out, haven't they, Hannah? There are certain issues that just don't go away. One of those that we mentioned is countries have different strategies. They have different speeds for vaccinations and for reopening, and they have different target markets for who they want to do travel bubbles or safe travel zones or safe travel corridors, whatever you want to call them. That's one of the key issues.
Yeah. The other issue, like we were saying, is this inbound is the focus. Well, if inbound is the focus for everyone, then that it benefits nobody. I think at some point, you countries need to be thinking of both inbound and outbound, and it should be a reciprocal benefit, right? If I open to you, I should get something. If you open to me, you should get something. Because only that way will countries really see any economic benefit from opening up to one another and taking that risk.
Yeah, you called it COVID strategy matching, but I think it's brilliant. That's absolutely spot on. I mean, then there's also the issue of domestic travel. There are differences within countries at the moment about the freedom to travel. Some countries are promoting domestic travel throughout the whole year. So, you know, that isn't going to go away. And we also have to work out whether domestic travelers who basically convinced that that's all they can do for the rest of the year may have already made their plans for the year.
Yeah, and then also you then have the issue of domestic travel in places where travel bubbles are open. So again, if we look at Bintan and Batam, they were actually talking about these areas being sealed off from local tourists. And local tourists would have to be vaccinated and tested to be able to enter these areas. And then there's that whole, do domestic travellers even want to go to areas where international travellers might be? And vice versa. You know, that inherent fear of the other, I guess, that they have COVID.
That's a huge unknown. I would totally agree. I mean, most countries in our region, domestic and international travelers haven't mixed together for over a year. By the time some of these happen, that could be 16, could be even be 18 months. That's a long time. Yeah, the fears are definitely going to be there. I would agree with you on that. Then we have the scientific side of things, the vaccination certificates, the management of PCR and other types of testing, blockchain technologies being used for these certificates. But, you know, do they match? Do they reciprocate across different borders? That's going to be a tricky issue.
Yeah, I mean, and the last one is, why is it only APAC looking at travel bubbles? What do the rest of the world know, or what does Southeast Asia know that the others don't? You know, if everybody, like we say, even within Southeast Asia, everyone's pursuing different strategies, things are going to be different. If everyone's pursuing different strategies worldwide, it's going to be even more complicated to recover source markets.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a really good question. I hadn't really thought about it too much until Rafat posted that tweet last week. But, you know, Europe went down this road last summer of reopening pretty liberally, and they had terrible problems, and that really, really caused all the COVID spikes that they had through autumn and winter, still touch and go whether many European countries will actually be open at all this summer. But if they are, I would imagine they'll be a lot more cautious than before. So we may see some cross-border bubbles in Europe that we didn't see before.
Yeah, something might come up, mightn't they? Especially if they see it working in, you know, if Australia and New Zealand get it up off the ground and it really works and there is some significant travel generated between the two of them, then yeah, other countries might think actually this is quite a sensible way to reopen borders.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that although the concept of travel bubbles still pertains, I think the name will change. I think there is a feeling that travel bubbles themselves, it's an old term and it didn't work. I noticed that Australia and New Zealand are now using the term safe travel zone. So maybe that's what we'll start to be using more in future.
I like that. Okay, safe travel zone. All right, the STZ. So that brings us to the end of this week's Travel Bubbles 2.0 edition of the show. We hope you enjoyed the podcast and don't forget to send us your thoughts and comments on what we discussed or missed out. As always, you can send us an email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or message us on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show or Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Meanwhile, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalogue, which starts all the way back in our pilot show in December 2019. You can find that on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, Castbox, Podcast Addict, Overcast, and Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each app. And if you do listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review us, as that helps other people to find the show.
So that's a wrap for this week, and we're off to wash these travel bubbles out of our eyes and ears. And we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.